All right, welcome back to another exciting week of Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Hope everyone enjoyed yesterday's episode of Game of Thrones. I am Ross Bolin, and I am here with Barrett Dudley.
Hello.
And Veronica Ruck.
Hey, guys.
Who has...
lost my voice. Sorry, I don't normally sound like this.
She spent the weekend back in her college town. She looks great, though. And our intern, Emily Clow, who's a social media intern here at Grand X.
Hi, guys.
Emily, what would your sigil be?
Oh, God. Okay, I did pretty basic. I had it, the colors would be black and silver, just because I pretty much everything I wear is black, and so it'd be bad not to have something that was black.
As you have a blue shirt on.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of, like, bad of me. And then because of that, I chose a white tiger because it's rare. It's badass, and it goes with the black and silver, and that's the only thing I could think of.
I like it.
An albino tiger.
Yeah.
It's very well thought out.
Yeah, it's probably the most Game of Thrones-ish one that anybody's actually said as well.
I don't even remember what... Oh, no, I do. No, never mind.
Mine was on glitter.
Yeah,
so
also
not Game of Thrones-y.
Also, Dave last week, when he said that his sigil would be a golden doodle, I think that was what he said.
Yes, it was.
He did not realize what we were talking about. He didn't know what a sigil was.
Okay.
Yeah, so just throwing that out there, Dave.
I kind of like that we have we had a guest on our Game of Thrones podcast who doesn't know what a sigil is.
Yeah,
I think
a lot of
people haven't. They've just been saying the animals.
Yeah,
he was
just like, oh, I like golden noodles. Like,
he said he thought he wanted to be handsome and what did he say? Cuddly or something? I don't know. Fuck.
No, and good at hunting.
Emily, yeah. He said those two things he aspired. Dave, we're talking way too much about Dave on this podcast.
Bye.
Emily? Who's your favorite character?
It's also pretty basic. It had to be Jon Snow. I mean, he's always been like a damsel in distress as well as a hero. So I mean, it's hard not to like him and follow his story throughout the series.
Snow. All right. Well, let's jump right into this week's episode. I feel like there was a lot of mixed reviews about what people thought about this one. I had people complaining that they thought it was really boring. I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
I liked it.
I thought like a million different things happened.
Yeah.
I thought a lot of stuff happened. Wait, I had a question though. Do they normally every week?
No.
Okay.
But you can ask the questions.
You know what I'm asking though,
yes.
Right? That they didn't do the music first. I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, I kind of freaked out.
I was like, where's the music? It's the best part.
I thought my channel got switched or something because
really
it didn't
confused.
Really look Game of Thrones-y either. And I was like, and then Ian McShane pops up. Great cameo, by the way. And I'm like, I don't know this dude. What is happening? I was totally thrown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's just dudes hauling lumber.
Yeah.
And then there's one dude who doesn't need help hauling lumber, who's just carrying it his fucking self. And then it's the Hound. The Hound is back.
The Hound.
Which,
if,
like,
the Hound.
Honestly, my like the reaction I wanted myself to have was to be upset that another another character that was killed off has come back, and it was another prediction that like a million people made. It was
too
easy.
I think we're just at the point where so many people watch this show where, like, if one person has a theory, like, one person's going to be right out of, like, thousands and thousands.
Yeah, but this one
and
was
then everyone
obvious.
Jumps on it.
That was a prevailing theory. And I actually really liked Ross's tweet that was like, so pretty much all you have to do is put a theory on Twitter and they'll make sure it gets into the show.
Yeah, and I actually saw that before I watched the episode, so I was like, oh, great, what theory got confirmed tonight?
Oh my God, actually, I thought it was somebody Snapchatted me while they were watching it, and I was in the Atlanta airport when this happened, and they Snapchatted me of their screen of Sansa, and they're like, I see the word Sansa, I'm pregnant. I'm like, fuck you, whoever you are. But they were, I don't know what they said. I was about to block their ass, though. I was so mad.
So the Hound is back, which I was super happy. Like, I was, like, really excited to see him again just because he's such a great character.
Yeah, he's awesome.
The show is better with him around.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have less hair than before?
It looked like
he's straggly,
slightly shittier looking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. His scars were a little more prevalent to me, he has the limp.
And that is just one hairy man. Like, he's got the whole, like, beard straight into the chest hair thing going on.
Yeah, and his chest hair is like a standalone triangle. I kind of want to shave mine to be like
that. Yeah, you should see if you could get that going.
I want to see if I can pull that off. So Ian McShane, he played Al Swearengen on one of my favorite shows ever, which is also on HBO, called Deadwood, is playing a guy named Brother Ray, who... saved the Hound, found the Hound bleeding out on the side of that mountain, and brought him back to where I guess is like, it's like a hippie religious commune.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're building a church. It took me a second watch of the episode to realize that structure they're building is a church.
Yeah, was not very obvious.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? But the thing is, this Brother Ray, he apparently doesn't believe in any particular religion. It's just that there is a higher power in general.
He's just a hippie.
Yeah,
it's just like the real modern day hippies.
So here's the thing. Everybody knew Ian McShane was going to be in this season because it got spoiled during the off season when they were filming.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So problem is, I got so freaking excited to see Ian McShane because he's a badass actor. He's in a ton of stuff. He was in one of the Pirates of the Caribbean for people who don't watch a whole lot of stuff. He played Blackbeard?
Blackbeard, yeah.
Okay, so I was really, really pumped for Ian McShane to see what character he would be playing. And I just assumed, based on how good he is, that it would be an important character that stuck around. So I was pretty fucking pissed off when he got hung by the end of this episode. He had, like you said, Barrett, like 15 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, yeah. He made it count. I read either this morning or last night after I watched the episode that he didn't want a multi-episode arc. He just kind of wanted to, like, pop in and have like a cool role.
Well, I guess that's okay.
He got what he wanted.
Yeah, he did.
I'm just personally, I was upset. My dad was bummed out too. We love Ian McShane.
Yeah.
Well, if you've never seen Deadwood, it's a great show. You should watch Deadwood.
And even though he did, you know, kind of like profess his feeling on faith that the important part is believing in a higher power, no matter which god it is that you're worshiping. His commune was all wearing the Star of the Seven.
Yeah.
So it's definitely, can I go ahead and, it's setting the stage for the Hound to be a part of the faith.
Right. And, okay, so let's get into the story of, he kind of tells the story of how he found the Hound. He says he should have died like 15 times, right? And the Hound says hate drove him to survive, which was awesome. And then I love that his character, all he does this entire episode is chop firewood. Like, he has so much anger that the only thing he can do is just chop firewood to prevent himself from murdering humans. So the Brotherhood Without Banners finds the commune. Just a side note, the main Brotherhood Without Banners guy that rides up looked way fucking too much like
Euron.
Why did they cast him like that?
I don't know. I was like, wait, what are you doing here?
I had to pause, be like, what is Euron Greyjoy doing here? This isn't the Iron Islands.
It was really confusing. It did not help. I was just like, all right, let's go. Let's see what's where it goes from here.
That was a terrible casting job.
Yes.
Yeah. He had the same facial hair.
I
had to pause the episode, Google Euron Greyjoy, pull up a picture of him, and then compare the two to make sure I wasn't like losing my fucking mind.
Yes.
Anyway, so the Brotherhood Without Banners finds this commune, asks if they have steel, food, whatever. They want stuff. Ian McShane tells them
To join for supper, but they don't have anything.
They're not giving them anything.
Yeah, like.
So they come back and murder everyone. And the part of this that was weird was the Hound is like off in the woods chopping firewood because that's what he does. He hears one scream, and it's a woman's scream. So he heads back to camp, to the commune, to the church, whatever. And that's when he finds everyone is dead. How the hell did he not hear?
I was thinking that too.
This massive slaughter going on.
Okay, I think kind of what was happening. Like, I think he hears the first scream, and he's too far away.
Get there in time.
I think he's further away than we realized.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
he
that
has
so
to be.
They just kind of like flash forward to when he actually gets there, and by that time, by the time he gets there,
everybody's
dead.
That whole yeah. place was funny to me. It looked like a weird like AA meeting. Like I used to love to kill, and now, and now I realize my life is so much better without it.
Well, that's like, exactly what it was. It was like an AA weird. Meeting. Yeah.
But okay, so here's another question that I have. The Brotherhood Without Banners was all about like stopping raiders and marauders. So what the hell are they doing now, like killing a bunch of innocent people?
That was a big question for me too. I never saw them as a evil group of people.
Yeah.
And even if they needed to come take things, they could have just come and taken those things. They didn't
without
need to
killing
murder
anyone.
Every
yeah.
single person there and hang Brother Ray.
Right.
So I didn't really get that.
Yeah, they were, I thought they were kind of supposed to be like good guy outlaws.
But I think in past seasons, we have come across members of the Brotherhood Without Banners who were a little more
yeah.
outlaw-y on the bad side of the law.
Yeah, that's, I guess that's as good of an explanation as any, but
yeah.
I thought that was a little weird.
Well, we're obviously going to see more of that
right.
In the coming episode next week. But because the Hound at the end of this one grabs that axe that he was using to chop firewood and will now switch to chopping human beings again. And we see that in the preview for next week. He's like literally swinging the axe at some poor dude's head. But yeah, so the stage is set pretty well for another prominent theory mm-hmm. that Clegane Bowl, #Clegane Bowl, will go down where the Hound ends up being the representative of the faith in the trial by combat for Cersei against the Mountain. What's interesting to me is I don't see the Hound and his gimp beating Frankenstein Mountain in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I guess
yeah,
I think that
the
Mountain is a little hobbled too, though.
But he's fucking enormous, dude. And
they're both
he's
enormous.
Wearing a sweet suit of armor.
Yeah.
They're both enormous.
But the Mountain is significantly bigger.
Is he?
Yeah. I mean,
they fight in season one.
Yeah, and I feel like they're kind of this.
And they come to a stalemate.
Yeah.
And
they were equal.
King Robert tells him stop.
That's right. Yeah. Robert breaks it up.
They
and
have
he's
huge
like,
swords.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a really slow fight. Two very slow-moving human beings. The only other thing I had regarding the Hound segment was a lot of people were emailing in to us at clamsandcockles@gmail.com. Saying they want to see Arya and the Hound reunited.
I would like that
too.
Yeah.
And that has to happen. It'd be so great.
If that's not going to happen for a long time, where the fuck is she? Where's she going?
Well, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. Okay, so let's go to Queen Margaery. It becomes finally pretty clear, well, no, completely clear, that she is in full long con mode.
Mm-hmm.
She is not
she's
bought into
awesome.
The faith.
Yeah.
She's doing the best acting job ever.
Ever.
Oh, yeah.
And playing this High Sparrow and the whole system as best she possibly can, which, Barrett, you were pretty spot on last week. It's also she can keep Cersei out of power and play the hand she has to the best of her, like to put her in the best possible position.
That's definitely what it seems
How
like.
How is she so smart? Like, she's young. Where'd she get all this, like, wisdom?
Well, like, her grandmother.
Yeah, her grandmother.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean, I just can't believe her grandmother didn't catch on earlier. Because, like, I always had, like, a feeling she was not fully in the faith. Like, there was always something going on because of how much she was, like, upset when she was in with the High Spirit. There was no way that she was fully into it. So I'm glad it actually came out that she was conning them.
But she's doing such a good job of playing them.
Everyone,
dude,
yeah.
I was completely bought in on, like, maybe she's broken.
I mean, maybe. And I was wrong. Maybe. The High Sparrow is also
super witty.
Very, very, you know, intuitive. And I'm wondering if he's convinced or if he's kind of got, you know.
Random note.
If he's one step ahead.
The High Sparrow was Governor Swan in Pirates of the
Caribbean. Yeah, I had to look him up because I remember.
Oh,
I didn't realize. That was also an emailer that pointed that out to us. And it blew my mind. Because this whole time, I've been like, I know this guy from somewhere. But man, I love those movies, and I didn't recognize him.
It's the wig. It's yeah, because it's in wig, in, yeah. in Pirates, he's got the long curly wig.
But one of the I think one of the movies, he takes off the wig and he comes out.
Yeah,
because that's the only reason I recognize.
That sounds right.
Well, they were a long time ago.
I mean, if there's one thing that Game of Thrones does well, it's just bringing out all of the best British actors that there are. Like, we had Max von Sydow as the Raven and Jonathan Pryce as the High Sparrow. And
the English are just getting crazy hooked up with roles in this show.
Yeah, I feel like we need, like, one, like, good American actor to do a cameo type thing.
Are there any? Are any of these people Americans?
No. I think we, Greyjoy, I thought he was American.
Alfie Allen is British as well.
Really? For some reason, I thought he was.
He's the brother of Lily Allen, the songstress, singer-songwriter.
Maybe we'll get like a songstress. Maybe we'll get like a Leonardo DiCaprio cameo for 15 minutes like we got with Ian McShane.
Hey, that's too big. Like somebody like
his British accent sucks. I'm so bad.
Obviously they wouldn't do. Leo would never do that. I'm just saying. I'm trying to think of like good cool American actors that I love.
It's probably going to be someone from HBO just crossover.
That's true.
The one thing about HBO that's so cool is once you're in the HBO family, you can be on any HBO show you fucking want.
Yeah.
If you crush your role. Like Ian McShane clearly was like, yeah, I want to do some of this. I'm down to do an episode of this show. HBO, there's always so much carryover between characters from like one series to another, but there will be like a 20-year gap between their roles. It's crazy.
So, what,
probably Carmela Soprano will like show up at
Or The Rock. I mean, that's what I'm assuming next.
So, Marjorie passes this that drawing.
That'd be sweet.
The drawing of a The Rock. The Rock.
Yeah, I was like, what if he came up in Game of Thrones? Like, that'd be kind of funny.
He's in the family now. So, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
The Rock fights the mountain.
That'd be sick.
Make it happen, HBO. Yeah, make it happen.
That's what we're throwing out
We're putting out a theory right now that The Rock is some type of Eastern Bravosi warrior who somehow gets to fight them out.
Oh, no. He has to be a Dothraki.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. He's already got the tats.
Yes, dude. He has the actual tats that he would need.
Watch him be a cow that comes out of nowhere. That'd be really cool, too.
No makeup work required. Saving hours. HBO, throw us some money for this spectacular idea. So Marjorie passes a drawing of a rose with a thorn on it, right? That was the picture she drew.
I took it as a rose.
Yeah, yes. That's what I thought.
To her grandmother, the Queen of Thorns, to let her know, basically, look, I've got this. Like, I know what I'm doing. And I think what Emily said is interesting. Like, it's a little unbelievable to me that her grandma didn't know already.
Mm-hmm. Like, they haven't talked in a while.
But they're so close, though, like back in the last season and whatnot. Like, she should have some of an idea. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I just feel like that grandma is such a badass and she's so wise that she should have been like, I know my granddaughter well enough to know that she's got this under control.
I think she was just afraid because she was like all dungeoned up for months and months. Like, maybe you got hypnotized.
So
brainwashed, not hypnotized. Sorry.
Or both.
Or both.
Is she going to leave?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. I think she was just telling her, like, leave because they're about...
Some shit's about to go down.
Yeah, and, like, you don't want to be here so you can get dungeoned up, too.
I'm just shocked that the grandmother didn't come up with it. Out of all things, I thought she would have come up with the idea to, like, con him and take over.
And there's a...
Well, she couldn't conspire
I think she didn't have an angle there. Yeah. Well, there's another theory. To wedge in.
Another theory is that King Tommen is actually in on all of this and is being guided by Cersei. Because we haven't seen...
No.
It's a theory. We haven't seen a lot of... I'm on the side that thinks Tommen is just a dumbass.
Yeah.
And he's just being played. But there is a theory that Cersei is actually got Tommen in on this long con. Maybe a separate long con even than Margaery, but I don't know. We'll see. I doubt that one.
I don't see that. There's been no indication that he has any type of like scheminess to him.
But there's not been a lot of interaction with him and Cersei, though.
What makes me put some weight behind
it. Yeah, it kind of makes sense, but I feel like the next episode will clear that up. Like, either she's going to reach out to him or he's going to reach out to her.
If that's the case, then, I mean, I could see... You know, Cersei's sitting there stewing after she gets roasted by the Queen of Thorns,
so awesome.
Which was awesome. And, you know, like maybe that's where she reveals like some sort of plot or reason for the Queen of Thorns to stay. I'd hate to lose that character back to Highgarden. What's she going to do there?
No, I just wanted Cersei to break. That's all I wanted.
She broke a little with her. Yeah, I fucked up. I think it's the best breakage. Ladies, any
comment on the Sparrow's revelation that coitus doesn't require desire, only patience?
That was weird. I'm sorry. I felt weird watching that.
I love when people use the word coitus.
Wait, did you just say that? He didn't say that.
What did he say? He used some euphemism for it.
He said like came to bed or marriage bed. I know that.
He said marriage bed, and then I'm pretty sure.
I think coitus might have just come from your brain.
Well, I know he wasn't like doing it.
Darn it.
Or like, you know, banging.
Yeah, I think that's, no.
The word coitus always reminds me of Quagmire from Family Guy. He uses that word once, and for whatever reason, I'll always associate it with him.
I know. What did you think about it, Veronica?
I mean, nothing real. I think this is like millions of years. I think it's fine. I think that's how they think then.
Millions?
Okay, whatever. I don't know. It's not real, so... It really didn't happen any number of years ago.
I'm just surprised.
But I think that's just, I don't know, that's how it is.
I'm surprised the High Sparrow said that. I did not expect him to say that.
But that's how even religion, like, think like Catholicism would be like, a woman's duty to her husband.
And I think it was,
that wasn't surprising to me.
That did make me it had like a little tinge of like maybe that's how Marjorie will do this, is by kind of seducing the High Sparrow. I felt like a little sexual tension there.
Yeah. I thought he put his hands on her leg, right?
Yeah.
Dude, that it was definite sexual tension with the intentional leg touching.
Yes.
And the just, in general, she's just like, can't not look like she's trying to seduce you.
She touched my leg.
Dumb and Dumber. Oh, real quick. So Father's Day, still coming up, right around the corner. We got a 20% off code for manoutfitters.com, which is owned by Grand X, who makes this podcast. Enter the code OCC at checkout for 20% off all orders. We've got Patagonia, Yeti, Under Armour, Columbia, Cole Haan, stuff your dad will love. The code expires June 30th. That's OCC at checkout. So let's move to Jon Snow and Sansa and Tormund and Ser Davos. They are roaming around campaigning for... men to fight with them to go take back Winterfell, right?
Yeah, they're trying to rally the northern houses.
So the first thing they have to do is get the wildlings to agree, which works out. After 1-1, the giant says, Snow, and then wanders off. I love that, like, all it takes really is for him to be on your side, because this has happened once before. Remember at Hardhome, when Jon Snow's trying to rally them, I think 1-1 is the one that kind of agrees with him. And everybody follows after him. Anyway, so he gets the wildlings on his side. They're going to fight with Jon Snow and everybody to go take back Winterfell. Then they go to Bear Island.
This awesome fucking little girl.
A 10-year-old child.
She killed it.
She killed it. Yeah.
Who is inexplicably mature for her age and super bitchy and
super
awesome.
Bitchy.
Like
awesome.
The best kid character I think we've seen on the show with a small role anyway. Like Arya's great, but this chick crushed it. And ends up giving them 62 men after this like long-winded argument where she shits all over Jon, she shits all over Sansa, and then Davos convinces her finally, like crushes another pep talk, because that's what he does.
Sir Pep Talk.
Sir Pep Talk. And she says, or Jon asks, how many men can you give or whatever? And she like leans over and talks with one of her advisors for a second and is like, 62. And everyone's like, 62. But she does make it a point to say that every man from Bear Island fights with the strength of 10 mainlanders.
Yeah.
So what's 62 times 10?
620.
So it's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure every house says that, though.
Yeah.
there was a little inside the episode, after the episode. I don't know if you guys saw that. But
yeah.
So this character is actually referenced in an earlier season.
By Stannis,
who's
this
like,
little girl?
Are you aware of this awful woman?
Awful
or whatever?
Child.
Yeah. This, and he actually even says that she's only 10.
Yeah.
And, you know. So this was not some thing that they just threw in there as a joke.
I loved her, everything about her, so much.
Remember when Bran was back in Winterfell having to be the Lord of Winterfell?
Mm-hmm.
And he was sitting at a table with the maester, who is now RIP. And he's doing a terrible job, like a child would. This girl is essentially the opposite of that.
Right.
Yeah. And she's like also dismissing her counsel, just like
she
like
gives a hand wave to the maester at one point, she's like silence.
Like literally like talk to the hands. I
enough
got it.
From
and
you.
Like, shutting down all the small talk that like John and Sansa were doing too was hilarious.
Everything about her was like, no. So funny.
She literally called it smooth talk. She was like, enough of your smooth talk, John.
John's just so taken back.
He cannot handle it.
I couldn't help but laugh.
He's like, fuck, I only know how to talk to savages. And
yeah, they were so they were worried, you know, about like putting all this dramatic weight on a 10-year-old. I wonder how, like, I wonder how many kids auditioned for that role.
Probably a lot. I don't know. It's like she was amazing.
And if they, and if she auditioned and they were like, yep, that's the one.
Yeah. Maybe I she's mean, American.
It really
though.
Depends how many. How deep into the audition she came in, because right. the second she auditioned, they were like, shut it down.
Yeah, for sure.
We have found our child. So then they go, our little crew goes to the Glovers to try to get Lord Glover to join in on. I didn't even remember the Glover family. Have they been involved in any way?
Not on the show.
Okay, so this dude is like a total dick who holds the Starks completely responsible for the imprisonment of his wife and children at the hands of the Ironborn. So I guess during the War of the Five Kings,
Yara takes that castle.
Okay, mm-hmm. So Yara came in, took the castle, imprisoned his family, and Lord Glover says, point blank, I served House Stark once, but House Stark is dead. That guy might not survive.
I mean, but he's not totally wrong.
No, he's not.
And also, the Starks really did fuck it all up, and Robb was a terrible, terrible leader, and he did blow it really badly by marrying that foreign whore instead of doing as he was supposed to. So I'm not that mad at the Glovers for being like, no.
Yeah, but that they're supposed to. What does Sansa say? She's like, might
they're
I
pledged.
Remind you that? Yeah, I mean, it's like you can't just break that off, bro.
Well.
But I think they kind of needed to be knocked down, because I feel like Sansa came in and was like, everyone's going to pledge to me, don't even mm-hmm. worry. And then like him being like, no, we're not. You like kind of screwed us over, kind of like put it into her eyes at like a reality shock.
Yeah, I really expected Sansa to contribute more to the recruitment process.
Yeah, I feel like I think she did a better job than Jon kind of though. Like she
well,
was
Jon's
like,
fucking awful at it.
Yeah.
He's just like, hello.
Yeah, John is definitely.
He's just like, hey, I'm like hot and kind of good at fighting. So
he's better at he's better with the simplistic small talk with the wildlings.
I don't think he likes to overstep his boundaries, and so that's Sansa's job.
That kind of makes a lot of sense. Like he grew up his whole life having to like kind of be second fiddle to everyone, so he's like, I don't know how to like.
But I wanted to see him in his second life, which is the one he's in now, after being resurrected. Like, have some more gumption, man. Like, have some balls. But he's still the same timid Jon Snow. Who's kind of like afraid to, like you said, like overstep his boundaries and like act like a highborn guy.
But I feel like he broke that when he was Lord Commander a little bit, because you saw a little bit more toughness, like when he killed like all the people that like killed him. I feel like that took a lot of power into his hands, but then he kind of just threw that away.
He still didn't even like
that.
He was like
such a baby.
He didn't want to look,
but he still did it. I mean, the fact he did it had somewhat.
I give him no credit.
Oh. Well.
Will the one listener emailed in asking, so Sansa is writing a letter after Jon tells her, like, look, she's all about we need more men. He's like, we don't need more men. This is who we're going to fight with. This is it. We're done recruiting. We're now going to take back Winterfell. So she goes and starts writing a letter. We don't see anything. It's about, like, who it's to, anything. Pretty obvious that it's going to be Peter Baelish, that it's going to be Littlefinger, I think.
Yeah, I read some dissenting opinions on that, but I feel like that's got to be who it is.
It would be surprising to me if it wasn't.
Some people said that maybe she was writing the Umbers, or maybe she was writing the Blackfish, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be
the Blackfish.
Blackfish is pretty busy at the moment.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be.
She doesn't know that, does she?
Well, she sent Brienne to Riverrun to talk to him already, so I don't know why she'd send it there.
Yeah, you're
right. Dude, it's going to be Littlefinger.
I'm pretty sure that's the only thing that makes sense.
Which, what people are worried about is that she's going to fuck this all up. Because we've kind of seen Sansa rise from, you know, obviously being a captive wife of a psychopath to now being, like, becoming the lady she's supposed to be. And I think a lot of viewers are expecting a regression back to... Hey, you're still just a child.
Oh, I hope not.
And that she's going to blow this whole situation up. Well, I don't know. Her writing a letter to Littlefinger, if that is indeed the case, does freak me out a little bit, because Littlefinger is a manipulative psychopath. Like, he's...
But he also, like, was truthful with her about the Blackfish and, like, kind of like owes her everything right now. So maybe she's like cashing in that favor.
I want him to come back. I'm tired of not seeing him.
Littlefinger?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I want him to come back more in the episodes. I feel like he has like a great part and he definitely is his manipulative.
His voice is so creepy though. He's like, I can't do it.
Oh, he does. He's such a great. There's that one dude who does
impressions. I probably sound like him right now. Like, yeah.
No, you don't. Trust me. There's this dude that does impressions of all the Game of Thrones characters and it's so good at Littlefinger. I'll try to find his name for next episode. So then we're at Jamie and Bronn heading to meet the Blackfish.
Good old Bronn.
So glad to see Bronn.
Yeah, that was great to have him back. Just dropping his mad wit.
Yeah.
Where was he? Where'd they find him?
He's
so
sassy. He says to one of the Freys, he's like, "You're lucky we're friends or we'd be fucking you in the ass right now." He's like, he's always got some sexual, horrible, awesome line like that. Yeah. We don't get to see him do anything super cool yet, but obviously the stage is set for Bronn to do some ass kicking in the next episode. So we find out that the Blackfish is indeed quite the badass. The two Frey idiots that have Edmure Tully up on a little stage that like they're gonna cut his throat. He just kind of stares them down for like 3 minutes while they continue to talk, and then is just like, "Fine, cut his throat." Which
awesome.
I think accurately predicted.
Yeah, yeah. I think Barrett said that exactly. Actually, like you wrote that episode.
Like I don't give a shit. Just do it.
Yeah.
And then they don't, which was
amazing.
Yeah,
so
they
funny.
Just totally back
like,
down.
Just pussies.
Then one of them, Jamie, bitch slaps one of them with his golden hand, and those guys are pretty much completely removed from being in control there.
Yeah, they are really writing the phrase as just like the bumbling morons of Westeros. Like they even look stupid. Like they're
yes,
wearing like
they,
they all
so
wear those
stupid.
Like leather flappy hats.
When
yes.
I think of them, I think of Monty Python. I'm
yes,
not
yes,
I
exactly.
Really do.
That's,
yeah,
that's fucking perfect. They look exactly like Monty Python knights. Like,
yeah,
just and, doofuses.
So. At the beginning of the podcast, we mentioned that there were mixed reviews about this episode. Most of the negative reviews that I heard that I like read were from book readers because this episode kind of like subverts a lot of what's in the book. And one of the things is that the Freys in the book, while occasionally clueless, are also pretty clever and conniving, and they did put together the Red Wedding, you know.
Yeah. Dude, I fucking hate book readers that complain are so annoying.
And I kind of like that we have one family that's just like, you know, the asshats of the world.
Yes.
So.
They pulled off one thing. They pulled off the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
Before and since, they have done absolutely nothing, and they're clearly just like not. They need to be wiped out.
Yeah, yeah, they should.
That gene pool needs to be removed.
Well, they violated, you know, what's it called? So...
Whatever it is when you serve food and drink to people.
Yes. Guess right?
Hey, what, you shouldn't kill them?
Yeah, like if somebody's in
your
house.
Yeah, that's pretty standard.
Yeah, but there's a word for it. There's a word for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, when you're hosting someone, probably don't kill them.
Barrett will look it up and we'll find it later. But
okay.
So Jamie goes and talks to the Blackfish one-on-one. There's an awesome drawbridge scene where the drawbridge comes down.
Yep.
Jamie makes a bunch of threats that don't work at all. The Blackfish basically tells him, like, go fuck yourself. Bring it on, dude. Like, one way or the other. If you can find a way to breach the castle, like, we'll fight you. But you probably won't be able to, and we've got 2 years' worth of food in here. Can you wait 2 years?
Yeah, that's pretty important
that, awesome.
That River Run has a moat. Because I feel like when you think of, and when you imagine castles, they all have moats and drawbridges.
Yeah, yeah.
But they don't. This one does, and it's really, really hard for a bunch of armored knights to attack a castle that a 40-foot moat in front of it.
When Jamie approached it, he kind of looks down at it like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, how are we going to even... Like, God, I hope this guy surrenders because this is going to be a huge pain in the ass. And that's what Blackfish tells him, like, point blank. Like, yeah, I mean, you know, you probably end up winning, but we're going to take out thousands of you. And not that there's not that many of us. So that was a cool scene. The Blackfish is an awesome character that I'm looking forward to seeing more of next week, too. Then... my favorite scene of this episode comes up with Theon and Yara. In
I
some,
like that too.
They were in like an awesome whorehouse that was like outdoors, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Like it was kind of like a beer garden.
Like yeah, that's what I thought.
But it also had whores. It was great.
it was a good way of putting it. Beer garden. Just great boobs abound all over the place. And Yara, who it's been long inferred that she might be a lesbian, mm-hmm. Is getting down with a super hot whore, which was just lots of good fun for the male viewers there. But my favorite part, and the reason it was my favorite scene, is because Theon, who was like a notorious, you know,
womanizer
back in his heyday in the first and second season, mm-hmm. or whatever, he's so bummed. He's like looking around and like he's like trying not to look at boobs, and like he's just like, oh God, he hates his life. It was fucking hilarious. Like, he did such a good job of acting there.
She was awesome, though. Yeah, she was like a little womanizer herself. I was like, oh, okay,
yeah,
Yara.
She was kick-ass. She had a great line.
Those Greyjoys, you know, just in the blood.
Yeah, they love some fucking.
It made me think, though, about her. She's got to have a kid at some point. And, like, after I saw that, I'm like, there's no way she'd just, like take it from some dude. I feel like, I don't know how she'll ever, like, produce an heir.
It'll be a threesome.
Because it only requires patience, not passion. Not
yeah, there you go. Passion. She had some great zingers. She was like, they don't make asses like that back in the Iron Islands or something like that. And then she said something like, I'm going to go fuck the tits off this bro.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, Yara, all right. She basically gets to be what Theon would have been.
Had yeah, making fun of him.
Off.
Some of us still enjoy it. So, like, okay,
well,
bitch.
Dude, and then she finally says, like, all right, I'm sorry. I won't make jokes like that anymore because, oh, my God, that's the meanest thing you could possibly do to somebody who's had his manhood removed.
Yeah.
Especially when it's your brother.
I just like her taking charge. Like, she was like, drink, drink, drink.
Dude,
it's
that
like,
was...
Stop being a coward.
When she's like,
so
literally,
cool.
Drink or kill yourself.
Yeah.
Like,
she's like, yeah, chug more ale, bitch.
A little pledge hazing right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, yeah. I thought it had to.
Drink it all.
Drink the ale. Pledge. Which was effective, because at the end, when he finally looks up at her, you see like this glimpse of old Theon.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he'll never be fully back to the way he was or whatever, but it was like slowly but surely. Yeah, that line that she delivered about like, if you think you're totally broken, like go cut your wrists and get it over with, was brutal.
Yeah.
But it was also like, I think the only thing to say to him at this point, like,
right.
Dude, stop moping around. Like, she's sick of seeing him.
He was still cowering like he was with the Boltons.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, dude, shit. Get out.
Well, and it's because he was in a situation that was completely reminding him of what had happened to him. He's in a situation where the old Theon would have been acting completely differently than he can now. So it was a pretty harsh reminder. But anyway, all in all, I loved the interaction there with Theon and Yara. Was there anything else important that happened in that? I don't think there was.
Oh, just that she said that she wants to go to Marine.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Very important.
So
yes, thank you.
They want to beat Euron, basically,
and
over
make
to Essos
and
make the deal, yeah.
With Daenerys.
Do you think that she would?
Yeah, she needs,
so.
She needs 1,000 ships.
Why the hell not? Yeah.
And everybody's all just running around the Seven Kingdoms acting like building 1,000 ships happens in like 2 weeks. That shit does not happen in 2 weeks. There's no way.
No.
This is
not.
Like 0% gonna happen. But now I kind of want like Yara and Daenerys to get it on. I just feel like that would be funny to me. Just like, you know what? Fuck all these dudes and just like.
Daenerys has had her share of bisexual moments on
Did
the show. Yes, when she was being trained to have
okay,
sex
that wasn't,
with the cop.
That was just like teaching.
It got a little. There was some tension. Then she was sleeping with that girl.
What?
Like in the same bed, not sexually, but maybe, I don't know. We don't know.
With
her like best Missandei? Friend.
Missandei? Yeah.
No.
No, it was
way before that.
It was when she was with Khal Drogo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. They were like
training her to
be the best. Like,
well, after Khal Drogo's death, that girl is still her closest person, confidant, mm-hmm. whatever, and they sleep in the same bed and stuff.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, there's some implication in the book of some screwing around going there, but that also might have happened with Cersei. I don't know.
I just
think
it would be
so
funny. Like, all these guys are like, oh, like, I'm gonna go, I'm gonna marry her. And what she's like, nah, Yara, actually. I just think, I know,
cool.
No, there's like
two queens.
There's a 0% chance that that happens. I just think it would be funny.
Yeah. I'd prefer the hooker that Yara was hooking up with in Daenerys to get it on. But,
you know. I'm not doing it for fantasy purposes, comedy purposes.
So then we go to Arya, who is big dicking her way around. What is the name of that island that she's on?
Bravos.
Bravos, where the House of Black and White is still. She's still there.
Yep.
She rolls up to two dudes, like merchants at a table, and basically throws down a sack of gold and says, I want to go back home to Westeros, after he's like, you can't afford it.
Yeah, she puts racks on that shit. She just like drops a rack.
She drops some bands there.
Yeah, yeah. Puts some stacks on the table.
Then she throws another one down and demands that they leave at dawn, which, you idiot, why not leave now?
Like, yeah, leave right the fuck now.
What the fuck is wrong with her? So, I mean, like, within 10 seconds, we're on to another scene where she's kind of, like, wandering to a little bridge, and she's, like, looking over at the statue.
Yeah, and, like, takes a minute to, like, pause, like, gaze out, like, have a little moment to herself. Like,
come
on, bitch.
This place.
Just pondering life and the possibility of traveling home at dawn rather than right the fuck now. And so the waif rolls up with the face of an elderly woman, slashes her across the stomach, gets behind her, and stabs her twice in the gut. What the hell? For everybody in this scene fucked up. The waif fucked up, could have killed her super easily.
Yeah.
What was with the stomach slash and the two stabs to the chest? Like, the stomach?
What's going to come back to haunt her is that Jaqen told her, don't make her suffer. If she had just slit her throat real quick, she wouldn't have, and it would be over.
Or, you know, stabbed her through the brain.
Right.
Or heart.
But she goes in the gut, and she does that second one and, like, jams it in there.
And twists it
to try to, you know, she's going to make this.
She was going to make her suffer.
Right,
exactly. She was trying to make her suffer intentionally.
And now Arya's not dead.
Yeah.
And she suffered.
The fucking waif.
The fucking waif.
But Arya is, like.
That was, like, a Snow White moment. She, like, walks up, like, hello. It was all ugly, so obvious. It was so obvious.
Arya's a fucking moron. She has to know better. She has to be watching her back. She has to have known they'd be out to get her. Like, come on, man. That was really disappointing. Like, I keep waiting for her to turn the corner, like, to make the fucking full transition into a total badass. And she's like, keeps teasing us with it and then being a dumbass.
Okay. How old is she at this point, do we think?
She's like 13, 14, 12.
Somewhere in that range.
She's older than Bran, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe like 15, 16? Because he's like.
No. You're letting the show characters and the serious puberty on the side of Bran throw off your.
So like, how old is Bran?
Like 12, 13.
Why you got to ask questions we don't know the answers to?
That's what this is about.
You're discrediting us as podcasters.
I'm not. I'm asking. Oh, it's just called discussion, Ross.
One thing that we did. One thing that I did take note of when Yara is talking to Theon, and the beer garden slash whorehouse, she says, "I know you had a couple of rough years." So that kind of,
and he fucking scoffs at that. He's like, a couple rough years.
So that we know at least 2 years have passed.
Yeah.
And probably a little before that. And I know Bran starts as 10. Yeah. So Bran is probably
like
13
or 14. So yeah, Arya's older. Okay, yeah. So then she should be smart.
Well, she's like 15.
Well, she still had that like teen, like, I know better than everyone, 16. Though.
Yeah.
Because,
Well, what was interesting is that after Arya barrel rolls off the side of that little drawbridge, really, not drawbridge, just a bridge, walking bridge.
just a regular bridge.
just a bridge. She, the waif looks like satisfied with, like, she thinks she has accomplished her task of killing Arya.
Right.
Yeah.
So she's an idiot too. Like, come on, man. Just because the person doesn't float up immediately, like if you don't see a body, the job is not done.
Okay. So
that should be a rule.
So I'm going to drop a theory on y'all. And this one's actually, I think, pretty fun because I don't think it's going to happen. And the theories that don't happen are actually more fun than the ones that do. So there is an Arya Fight Club theory that Arya is the waif.
What?
Yeah. And that, because like every time in the House of Black and White, when Jaqen wants to talk to Arya, he like makes the waif leave the room.
That's true.
And then he talks to the waif. And that, so with maybe the waif is kind of Arya's no one personality that's trying to eradicate the Arya Stark part of her personality.
That's an interesting theory.
That's nice. I don't think it's true.
I'm with
but
you. I don't think that one's going to play out either. But it
but
is.
But I
cool
do like
theory.
It. Yeah.
And so when the waif is like, you know, she says to Jaqen, "You promised. Basically, you promised I could kill Arya Stark." Then that's when he's like,
"Yeah,
okay, go for it, do it."
Another theory is that was not Arya.
Arya
was rocking a face, or that Arya put a face on someone else or something. I don't really know.
But how would she have her own? That doesn't make any sense, though, because she would have to be dead for her face to.
It's another theory that's out there.
Yeah, but also a wrong one.
She's not supposed to have that the power yet that like Jaqen has.
Yeah, but she does have that because she like has put on other faces.
Well, but don't you have to go to the Hall of Many Faces to get a face to put on?
Yeah. I don't know if Jaqen does. He seems to just kind of be able to.
But I think he might just be like have a shit ton of them.
Maybe
on
he just
it.
Has like
I
five
think
in his pocket.
He's just wearing a bunch of them all the time.
At one point, he gets like 10 of them pulled off his dead body.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I still don't even know if he's alive or who's who anymore. Yeah, that whole situation is nuts. Anyway, it's going to be. Arya just ends up like wandering down the street, just bleeding everywhere.
And everybody's just like looking at her.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody seems to be willing to help her.
I was like. For a second, when they're all staring at her, I'm like, are they all, like, many-faced people? Just like, haha, like,
and I think
dying.
That the actress that she saved might find her and help her back to health.
Yeah, I heard that, actually.
What do you think the chances are that this whole thing of her not killing the actress, like, is the real test of the House of the Black and White? What if she's supposed to kill the Waif? Is that the test? Or if she kills the Waif, will that just satisfy the many-faced god because she puts a face up
it
there.
It would make me really happy if what you're saying, something along those lines, is what happens because I don't like the lack of depth with these many-faced
right,
idiots.
That they're just hired assassins.
Yeah.
Like, it's not clever. No. It's not cool anymore.
It was at the beginning, but once it started actually playing out, it kind of was like, this is boring. Like, can we move on to the next plot?
Yeah, yeah. I'm with you.
So I'm hoping there's some kind of twist like that where it ends up that... I'm doubting that it's going to happen. But
yeah,
man,
me too.
That'd be so much better.
But Jaqen was so cool. I just hate to think that he's just like, oh, yeah, you got $10? Okay, I'll kill whoever
but
you want.
I feel like he's manipulative. I feel like he has something in his back pocket that's coming out that we don't know.
And he did not... I kind of see that a little bit, too, because he did not care that much about, like, killing Arya after
that's why
that.
I think
he literally was just like, the Waif's like, okay, can I do it? And he's like, yeah, okay, fine.
But
like
that's
I know his attitude,
though.
Yeah.
But I feel like he favored Arya a little bit more than the Waif, and I think the Waif obviously had jealous issues with that, and so I feel like he knows that Arya has a lot of power with her, and so that's why he said not to make her suffer, to have Arya kind of attack her, because Arya learned how to fight back when she was blind pretty quickly, we assume. So
yeah.
Or the Waif doesn't exist and none of this matters.
Yep.
Anything
like
else
theory.
With Arya in her dumbass situation that she's in now?
Nope.
God. It's like one step forward, two steps back for that girl. All right, so let's get into some listener emails. This first one is from Alberto. He says, since the Hound was revealed this episode, it feels like the Clegane Bowl with the two brothers is basically confirmed. What are your thoughts about the Game of Thrones writers throwing us a curveball and actually making the brothers team up in order to help defend King's Landing from the High Sparrow? However, if this doesn't happen, which Clegane would you put your money on in a trial by combat? I think the odds of them teaming up are like zero.
Zero.
Yeah.
There's way too much history there.
Well, and when he says that he was driven by hate, I mean, I think he hates his brother more than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he hates the crown quite a bit too.
Yes.
Probably right after his brother. So I don't see that happening at all, Alberto. But if I have to put my money in somebody in the trial by combat, it's sure as shit going to be the Mountain.
Yeah, I think the Mountain too.
I mean, it's hard to say.
I feel like, honestly, just somebody we like has to die. Something bad has to happen.
People we like are about to die.
I mean...
I'm, like, getting bored with all this, like, happiness.
I feel like there's so much setup. I want a real fight. There's so much setup going on. I want, like, an actual, like, big combat scene. And then we haven't had that.
I was actually... When Arya
episode
gets...
Episode 9, probably.
Most likely.
When she gets... Yeah, episode 9. When Arya gets shanked... By the way, I was actually like, oh, sick.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
I was like, let's kill somebody that we like. Because
something
because,
crazy.
Yeah, because all of this, basically for the first five seasons, what was, you know, kind of fun about Game of Thrones is that they did not indulge in fan service.
Right.
They were not like, we're not going to give you like cool shit that you think would be fun to see. We're going to give you the opposite of that, and you're going to love it.
That's why you loved it. Yeah. And I'm getting kind of like, I kind of want to be a little
heartbroken. It's so funny how the grass is always greener because in the first four or five seasons or whatever, people just incessantly bitched about how dark the show was and how depressing it was and how there's never any payoff. And
but
then
that's
now
why we were hooked.
We're a little over halfway through the first season that we've actually gotten a bunch of that. And people are like, fuck this, man. Bring back the morbid, brutal, like, just like everybody wants the bad stuff back. But I feel you. I'm in the same boat.
Just because it was surprising.
Yeah, I was
that's the thing. A lot of happiness is predictable.
A lot of this is too predictable.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you can see it coming from two episodes away. And I feel like it need to have something that's, like, going to shock everyone.
But I also think you have to have... Like, you can't roll the way that we did the first several seasons forever. There has to be some build back up to tear it all back down or whatever.
I just want something surprising again.
I just want to be shocked. Yeah. That's it.
So I do think that the Hound will win that fight.
You do?
Okay.
If it comes to pass.
Maybe that's a revenge. Because
I think that's how Cersei dies.
Maybe they both die. What if they both, like, kill each other?
I think they probably will both die, but I think that the Hound will be the one standing after the fight.
And then someone comes and kills him.
And then he gets caught.
Yeah. So he wins. Cersei dies. Hound dies.
I feel like he needs to kill his brother, though, just to, like, satisfy himself. And
yeah.
And then, obviously, he'll get killed after that.
A lot of people are in on the Cersei dying, from what I can tell from Twitter now. And that seems like a real possibility to me, too.
Yeah.
Because there's been so much buildup with her, and I think she's going to get some semblance of revenge somehow. I mean, we see... In the preview for next episode, the Hound is crushing Skull again. Like, he's murdering a dude that's a member of the Faith Militant.
The Mountain is.
I'm sorry, yes, the Mountain is murdering a dude that's a member of the Faith Militant. So, some of Cersei's comeback is going to begin next week. So, I think she'll get some of it, and then she'll die.
I don't think she'll die yet, because that prophecy, she has to bury Tommen. Like, Tommen has to... She has to, like, watch all three of her kids die before she dies.
Yeah, you know? That could happen pretty easily at any
moment. I guess, but I feel like...
Yeah, he's a dumbass, remember? Yeah.
But I... And then what happens? Like...
Chaos.
Who's in line for the throne if he dies?
That's when we get back into the unpredictable realm, where nobody fucking knows what's going to happen next.
I feel like she'd be okay if she died just because of what... I mean, the grandmother said that she's like, no one wants you here. Like, you might as well not be here.
Yeah,
but her and Jamie are back to us against the world, where they only love each other, they care about each other, and then their children, obviously, but, like, they don't give a shit about anybody else. It's all about them.
I think, like, Jamie cares just that much more than she does right now.
Which is kind of, I mean, caring about your family and your children and nothing else is kind of the setup for your entire family to die, a la the Starks.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's actually kind of why I see, you know, that basically... The Lannisters kind of befalling
the
same
fate.
All the
Lannisters, there's like no more Lannisters then.
Yeah. Well, I think like Jamie seeing his daughter die was like a really big turning point, because he actually saw like her die and Cersei wasn't there. And so I think he really wants to fight for his family as much as he can and doesn't really care what it takes.
Yeah. We got another email from Scott, who says, let's not forget that the one knight who has defeated the Mountain before in the first season's tournament was the Knight of Flowers, Sir Loras. He could be on the Faith side based on the fact that he's been locked up forever and he just wants it all in.
That is actually a really good point, too.
I do like
so
that.
Scott brings up a great possibility if it's not going to be the Hound. And I'm going to say this. I don't think Clegane Bowl is going to happen.
Okay.
I think they want us to think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the first thing this season that doesn't go the way everybody thinks it will.
Okay.
Because that, honest to God, out of all the shit that's happened that everybody keeps going, oh, God, we all predicted this. Oh, God, we all knew this. One of them, you know, there's going
to
be a breaking point
where
shit goes the other way. And that feels like a really good opportunity
for stuff to go the other way.
That is a
really
good theory.
They have an amazing fighter sitting in their dungeon who needs to atone for sins. What a better way to do it.
Yeah, probably not in great shape.
That's what I was going to say.
But, you know, they play with time a lot. He could have been started training after this. There could be a... Fucking Marjorie could know that's the plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could be the one that's like, get my brother out there. He'll take this fool down.
Yeah.
I love this theory, Scott.
This is good theory, Scott.
I do, too.
I had not thought about it.
Good on you, Scott.
Here's a surprise
one. I forgot all about that they faced off.
User email of the week, Scott. All right. Then we got one from a guy named Mason, or a girl. I don't know. There's girl Masons, right?
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah. One of the sexes. Just listened to the podcast for this week. Y'all were talking about the whereabouts of Joffrey Sword, Widow's Wail, after he died. Tywin had it sent to Casterly Rock for safekeeping until Tommen, parentheses, fuck that kid, in parentheses, was old enough to wield it. Just a heads up. So that was just, we were talking about last week where that sword is. Mason pointing it out for us. Another Mace. One.
Thanks, Mace.
Another one from Zach. OCC team, y'all were wondering what Randall Tarly has done and why he is so hard on Sam. He is one of the greatest soldiers and generals in Westeros. Last season, Stannis mentioned to Sam that he was the only person to defeat Robert Baratheon in battle during Robert's Rebellion. Mm. He's just an old-school Westerosi that puts a ton of importance on battlefield accomplishments compared to everything else. He probably thinks being a maester is for peasants. Love the show. Thanks, Zach. Yeah, I think that was on me. I was like, what has this guy done that makes him think he can like be such a dick to Sam? And I didn't really remember that. It's a great point. I mean, he is supposed to be one of the most like heralded military minds in Westeros. So in conclusion, what did everybody think of this episode? I'm on the side of I thought it was one of my favorites. I thought it was really, really good. And I was interested in everything that went on, and it was a lot of my favorite characters that got featured. So I wasn't one of the people who thought it was boring or that nothing happened.
I liked it. I wouldn't say it was one of my favorites, but I mean, I wouldn't say nothing happened, but I wouldn't say like something happened.
Yeah,
either.
But it seems like it sets the stage so perfectly to be insane.
It was all still really interesting. Yeah. I liked it, but I wasn't like,
no, it was for sure. But it was a build up episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a build up episode, thought a lot of good shit happened.
It was good. Yeah, I think the build-up episodes this season are better than they were in the past. Last season, I was like, oh, okay. I just like wasted my time.
I was a huge fan of the cold open once I realized it was a cold open.
I know. They need more of those.
I think they should just switch to that, like doing a little thing. And then having it be like, but like boom, intro. Because that intro is so, so good that having something kind of like build to suspense, it is even better.
I don't know. It freaked me out, and I didn't like it.
I mean, it had me turn. It had me turn.
Like, I love that strategy, and it's one that Breaking Bad used to use.
It threw me for a loop, but it was
that was
cool.
The most shocking thing about this episode, honestly. Like, no other shock happened besides.
You don't think Arya getting stabbed twice in the stomach was a kind
of
a shock?
But she lived.
So predictable.
Maybe. Maybe she lived. I mean, she lived. Otherwise, we just wasted the fuck out of our time watching her train for no reason.
I mean, it was still like, I was still like, I did one of
those. I was, okay, I was shocked when it happened, but then as soon as, like, the wave walked away, I was like, it's fine. She's
I would
fine.
Have been more shocked if Arya attacked that old lady and it wasn't the wave. I feel like I mean, that's what I would be more shocked by.
Dude, how gnarly would it have been if, she just was murdered by a random old woman who lost her mind, like a senile old lady who just needs to kill. Yeah,
I mean it sounds like Game of Thrones, though. I mean,
what did you think, Emily, of the episode as a whole?
I mean, I liked it because it did bring a lot more stuff to build up with. But I'm just really tired of build up. I want something to happen.
But
I
think you're about
to
get three full episodes.
I really hope so, or I'll be really disappointed. Like, extremely disappointed.
The hype in my head is so built up now. Like, yeah, I'm so confident that the next three episodes are going to be complete and utter chaos that if they're not, I'm going to be depressed.
Who y'all got in a Jamie Brienne battle?
Brienne.
Dude,
Brienne.
Okay, so let's get into next week's preview. I'll just run through quickly like all the shit that it showed us because it was so much stuff that I literally found myself going back through and pausing and writing it down.
I always miss stuff. Always.
Oh, my God. It was so crazy. So the Cersei face off with Lancel. We finally see he says, make your man, her man being the mountain, move aside or there will be violence. And she says, I choose violence.
Yep.
And then the mountain's going to crush skulls.
Great line.
Then we see Brienne talking to Jaime about how if she fails to convince the Blackfish to surrender, honor compels her to fight Jaime. That's a crazy fucking possibility to me that they could end up on opposite sides.
Okay. Let's just ask the question. Why would the Blackfish surrender?
I think it's pretty clear he's not going to unless there's another card thrown into the
The only play. Thing I can imagine is that if the Lannisters agree that if they surrender, they'll let them all walk and then Brienne can take them to try to take Winterfell.
Or something with Littlefinger. Maybe he has something up his sleeve about Riverrun.
I'm a little hesitant to buy into the fact like that whole scene that's been set there for that battle seems like too easy. Mm-hmm. But this has been the season of the stuff that I thought was too simple or mm-hmm. too predictable happening. So I don't know.
Kind of makes sense that the Tullys would go help the Starks, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I just really hope we don't end up having to watch a Brienne, Jaime.
Yeah, that would, that, yeah.
Well, first of all, she'll kill him.
She has both of her hands. And she almost killed the hound, Jamie, please.
Right, but like we could get like a wrestling match thing where like third guy comes in with the steel chair, like Bronn comes in with a dagger and basically like takes her. Like,
yeah, that would be such a shitty way to lose her, man.
Is the type of shit that Emily wants, though.
That's true. That is true.
Deep down inside, it's what everybody wants.
I just feel like it'd be heartbreaking to see them fight, just because they had like a lot of history, and like to them like kill each other would be just kind of.
Which means that after all the fan service this season, that's probably going to happen.
Yeah, that's
true. I just can't see it happening though, because I don't know.
Sansa would be fucked too with Brienne.
It is a total.
I didn't think about that.
It's like her character is all about honor, all mm-hmm. about keeping her word. And
which
the Kingslayer is the fucking opposite.
Yeah.
And he even has a line in the preview for next year, this next season, this next episode, getting way ahead of myself, that is, he's basically like, I will murder every Tully on the face of the earth to get back to Cersei.
Yeah.
So, while they're like magnets, man, with their values. Mm-hmm. So, maybe they will end up fighting. Then we see Cersei walking through the throne room with the mountain. I don't really know what the hell that was about. It was just kind of cool. Everybody's like, holy, everybody's just freaked out by the mountain. We see the Blackfish with Brienne on like a side exit of the castle, drawing a sword.
I did not even
which it
see
made
that.
It seem like there was a possibility that maybe Brienne has something she convinces him to. It's them standing by themselves on the side of the castle outside of an exit door.
I remember that.
One else around, and he draws his sword.
I'm going to have to go back and watch this.
Yeah. Why is her endgame to get him to surrender the castle?
We don't know yet.
I thought she was just going to be like, yo, like, let's hook up Sansa right now. That's what I thought she was there for.
That might be what she convinces him to do, is like, look, you could do this. That's great. But this is where you're really needed with Sansa.
Yeah.
This is where you really could make the biggest difference. Like, fuck this castle. Mm-hmm. Leave it.
Maybe
this tiny, dinky castle, too. Is it even that dope? Like,
well, it's where the Tullys...
Yeah,
it is the
from.
Tullys.
Oh, okay.
They're like homeland.
Okay.
It's like the Starks are to Winterfell.
I think she didn't want to tell Jaime that, and that's why she was like, I'm going to fight you, because she doesn't want to tell him that like Sansa wants the castle back, because then he would put him against the Starks again.
And I think there's a possibility that her sales pitch to the Blackfish will be, look, let them have it. Let's go get Winterfell. Then we'll all come back here and fuck these guys up and take it back for you or whatever. I don't know. We'll see. Then we see the waif. Like, she's like running, and then a chick that doesn't look like her is flying through the air across like a balcony area. Like, I don't know. I'm just writing down everything that was in there. Then we see the Hound swinging an axe at some dude's head. Pod being put in a chokehold from behind. And I paused it on this.
It looks like
it's Bronn who's getting him in the chokehold.
I thought it was Gendry.
I spent like 45 minutes doing this breakdown. And then the mountain about to rip a member of the Faith Militant's head off. He grabs him. You know how they all wear those chains across their chest in the form of an X? He grabs him by the back of it, and then grabs him by the fucking, like, not the throat, not the chin. Right in between where he could, like, rip this dude's head off.
Was he on the ground, or was I just imagining
He's on the ground,
yeah. I was like,
yeah, head's about to get ripped. Yeah.
I'm putting my money on that guy's head popping off.
Maybe squeezing it, even.
Anyway, we need to start doing these next week preview breakdowns, because, like, that maybe it was just that one in particular that was so awesome, but I was, like, totally enthralled. All right, so that's it. I'm Ross Bolin. I'm WR Bolin on all social media. Barrett, you want to plug your social?
Yeah, at Barrett Dudley across all social media.
Veronica, has yours changed since last episode?
No. What?
So it's still Veronica Ruck across all social media?
Yeah. What?
And Emily?
Mine's Emily E. Cloud. Besides Instagram, it's Cloud, like CLOWD_9 spelled out. Don't ask me. It's from high school.
Cool. Also, we've got some other podcasts that we make here at Grand X. One is Touching Base with Postgrad Problems. If you're in the 20-something range and need something to listen to at work, that's a great one. It's slightly less great than ours, but it's still great. And the Inside TFM podcast. Both of those are available on SoundCloud, iTunes, you know, anywhere you want to find them. Just Google it. Again, check out manoutfitters.com. Use that promo code OCC for 20% off your Father's Day gifts. Thank you guys for listening. Every week we've seen like crazy growth. It's been super cool to see. So keep subscribing on iTunes. The way we move up on that, the iTunes charts, is by you rating and reviewing and subscribing. So leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, tell your friends who watch the show to do the same. Follow us on Twitter at Clams and Cockles. And this is a big thing. Send your user email or your user emails. God, I've worked here for too long. Listener emails to clamsandcockles@gmail.com because this week we're going to do a mini-sode, which is a mini. It's a combination of the words mini and episode.
Thanks,
mini,
Ross.
Mini-sode.
Good clarification.
Thank you for thank you for clarifying.
Just in case any of you are like slightly slower than others.
Like Aria.
On Thursday, we're going to do one that's just answering and addressing listener emails. So send your emails to clamsandcockles@gmail.com and look forward to that on Thursday. That is it. We are out. Barrett, you look like you have something to say.
No, I'm done.
Oh. Then that's it. Roll the fucking incredible song that we have.
Your little man.